Very few Montanans have been able to sign up for Obamacare. Good evening, I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck, and Capital reporter Dan Boyce has our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
We'll also tell you why Montana legislators think they don't have an equal say in state government. And in our ongoing Montana Public Media Climate Week series, Flathead reporter Katrin Fry looks at the impact of our warming waters on two of Montana's iconic fish species. The state's insurance commissioner says Montanans are still having problems signing up for health insurance on the Affordable Care Act online marketplace. Most states, including Montana, opted to let the federal government run their Obamacare marketplace. The federal site has been plagued with glitches and technical problems for 3 weeks now, and it is not clear when they will all be fixed. Capital reporter Dan Boyce says Commissioner Monica Lindeen says that is not acceptable.
Montanans looking to get federal subsidies for their health insurance through the Affordable Care Act have three options: a 1-800 number, sending in a paper application, and the way that's been pitched the most from the very beginning, by logging onto healthcare.gov. It's been very hard to do that last one. For weeks, the site has been glitching, not allowing people to sign up for plans.
This goes deeper than just having too many people logging on at the same time.
That's Montana's Commissioner of Securities and Insurance, Democrat Monica Lindeen. President Obama and other top officials have been strongly urging supporters not to give up on the website.
By now, you've probably heard that the website has not worked as smoothly as it was supposed to.
Here's the president speaking in a video uploaded this week by Organizing for Action, a nonprofit which supports the president's agenda.
But we've got people working overtime in a tech surge to boost capacity and address the problems. And we're going to get it fixed.
I have confidence that they're probably putting the best and brightest on it right now.
But Lindeen says that should have been the case from the very beginning.
I mean, let's face it. This is the president's signature policy of his presidential career. And I would have thought that they would have made sure that it went off without a hitch.
Lindeen fought in front of the 2011 legislature for Montana to run its own state-based exchange. Republican majorities turned that proposal down. Lindeen says the state-based exchanges around the country have largely had greater success with their sites, and she believes that would have been the case in Montana, too. Three companies are offering insurance policies on Montana's Obamacare site: Blue Cross Blue Shield of Montana, Pacific Source, and the Montana Health Co-op. Jerry Dworek is the CEO at the Montana Health Co-op.
I've been trying to get through for 3 weeks myself, and I have not been able to get completely through without getting hit with an error.
The co-op was founded because of the Affordable Care Act, to provide more competition on the online marketplace. Dworek says he's encouraged by the amount of interest the co-op has received.
The first day that the exchange was open, we had over 4,000 hits on our website and 250 calls.
The co-op's website continues to get between 800 and 1,000 hits a day.
It's frustrating that people call here. You know, they shop on our website, they find out what the net cost is going to be, and they say, you know, we want to buy, and we say, well, you've got to go to healthcare.gov, and then they kind of cringe.
Dworek says a little more than 30 applicants have successfully made it through healthcare.gov from people looking to buy plans from the co-op. Ultimately, he says the new startup is totally dependent on the federal website working properly. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Montana Communications Director John Doran says the company is not releasing numbers of Obamacare enrollees at this time, but he says even when customers do get through the marketplace and enroll, the federal system isn't communicating everything fully.
And so the necessary documentation isn't sometimes finalized, and then we have to go back and contact that person to finalize the plan.
Officials for Pacific Source, the third insurance company on the exchange, were not immediately available for comment. Commissioner Monica Lindeen says people can only be patient for so long, and she hopes Montanans don't get so discouraged by the glitches that they give up, because she says the insurance plans offered on Montana's exchange are good products. Her office has reviewed every one of them.
Given the opportunity for people to sign up for them, given the opportunity to look at being eligible for some of these tax credits to make it even more affordable, is going to be a huge benefit to thousands of Montanans, tens of thousands of Montanans.
The deadline to enroll in Affordable Care Act insurance plans is December 15th. For plans that start at the beginning of the year. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
And in other news from around the state, A Missoula man charged with driving onto a sidewalk while drunk and hitting two sisters, killing one, has pleaded guilty to two felonies. KCI-TV reports Tom George Vineyard pleaded guilty today to vehicular homicide while under the influence for the May 16th death of 39-year-old Roberta Demert. He also pleaded guilty to negligent vehicular assault for injuries suffered by 41-year-old Pamela Demert. Sentencing is set for January. Pamela Demert told investigators she and her sister were walking to get cigarettes at about 1:30 a.m. when they were struck. Court records indicate Vineyard's blood alcohol level was 0.239, nearly three times the legal limit. District Judge Ed McLean granted a request from Vineyard's attorney to allow Vineyard's alcohol monitoring bracelet to be removed. Vineyard is enrolled in an outpatient alcohol treatment program.
A Big Fork man has pleaded guilty to negligent vehicular assault for a crash in which his truck hit a motorcycle, causing the passenger on the motorcycle to have her left leg amputated. The Daily Interlake reports 47-year-old Brent Passwater entered his plea last Thursday. A second negligent vehicular assault charge was dropped as part of the plea agreement. Prosecutors say Passwater's blood alcohol level was twice the legal limit on July 11, 2012, when he struck a motorcycle while making a left turn off of Montana Highway 83, northeast of Big Fork. The driver of the motorcycle suffered a broken left foot. Passwater's sentencing is set for January 2nd.
Officials in northern Idaho found an Idaho State Police trooper was justified in shooting a 26-year-old Montana man who grabbed a gun while officers were questioning him during a welfare check on Lookout Pass in June. Shoshone County prosecuting attorney Keisha Oxendine said Kootenai County investigators found Alexander Mandarino of Whitefish, Montana, posed an immediate and continuing danger to Trooper Dodd McDevitt and Shoshone County Deputy Adam Derflinger as the three struggled over the gun. McDevitt fired his gun and Mandarino died of a single gunshot wound to the chest. An Idaho Transportation Department worker sought the welfare check on June 12 after seeing a car parked at a turnout about 2 miles west of the Montana-Idaho border. Officers questioned Mandarino for about 45 minutes before he grabbed the gun.
Montana lawmakers who say term limits have reduced their effectiveness are looking to other states for ideas on how to strengthen their branch of government. The Legislative Council met today to examine other legislatures' structures and to lay out a year-long plan to study whether adopting any of those practices would bolster its own. Republican Senate President Jeff Esman says the legislature is supposed to be equal to the executive and judicial branches, but it has been weakened by 8-year term limits on lawmakers and the schedule of the legislative sessions. He says term limits have resulted in no lawmakers having a deep knowledge of government agencies and issues. In addition, Esman says holding biennial sessions that last 4 months and begin soon after elections handicaps the legislature's effectiveness.
Two of Idaho's largest universities reported enrollment declines this year. Boise State University saw its total students during the fall semester sag to 22,003 from 22,678 last year, a drop of 3%. Meanwhile, the University of Idaho saw its overall enrollment plunge nearly 5.2% to 11,844 from 12,493. Both schools sought to put a positive spin on declining enrollments. BSU, the state's largest public university by enrollment, says its new freshman class is smaller than last year, but better prepared and more focused on earning a degree than ever before. It says the students it lost were largely non-degree and part-timers. The University of Idaho says it saw increases in freshman students and new graduate students, as well as more students from countries other than the United States.
A film based on Missoula author Pete Fromm's novel As Cool as I Am will be shown this weekend in Missoula as a fundraiser for Planned Parenthood. The film is just out this year, but the novel was written 10 years ago. It's a coming-of-age story about a teenage girl, played by Irish actress Sarah Bolger, and starring Claire Danes as her mother. Fromm says people shouldn't be surprised a middle-aged man could write a story from the point of view of a teenage girl.
Yeah, my wife calls my job sitting in my basement playing with my imaginary friends. And if you do that all the time and you're making stuff up, it's not that difficult to put yourself into another's skin. And the gender difference, I think, working just with the emotions, the emotions are more universal than people realize. You know, people get elated, get sad, in pretty much the same way. So if you can make the emotion true, that somebody thinks, wow, that's how that would feel, they can get into the character without worrying about the picture of the mustache guy on the back of the book.
The film, As Cool As I Am, will be shown Saturday evening at the MCT Center for the Performing Arts in Missoula. The reception begins at 6, and the film will be shown at 7. Contact the MCT Center for ticket information. We'll have a feature interview with Fromm next week during Montana Evening Edition. Tonight in our Climate Week series on climate change, we focus on the impact on water and fish. Coldwater fish like West Slope cutthroat and bull trout call Northwest Montana home. However, these native fish could be considered the canary in the coal mine in regard to the effects of climate change. Warming waters, changes in spring runoff, and midwinter rainfall are among the issues affecting the habitat for these fish. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry has more on how climate change is being seen in Northwest Montana's waters.
Glacier Raft Company has been offering fishing guide service since it started up in 1976.
Fishing is a big part of our business anymore.
Darwin Stoneman is one of the original owners of the West Glacier-based business.
We also have cabins and a retail operation and rent rafts and rent all kinds of gear that people can take into the park or go fishing with.
The company guides predominantly on the middle and north forks of the Flathead River.
Well, the primary fish in the river and the what the river is really managed for is West Slope cutthroat, which, you know, is the native species, and, you know, they're pretty specific to a few drainages here in the northwest.
Stoneman says anglers will occasionally catch bull trout, but they're not allowed to target them. He says the rivers had a large population of bull trout until about 10 or 15 years ago. Bull trout were listed as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act in 1999. Stoneman says over the years, he's been seeing the overall fishing in the North and Middle Forks improve.
For one thing, in 1964, you know, there was a huge flood, which basically scoured the river. I think that had some effect on the fishing because it, you know, it either swept away or, you know, maybe took away some of the habitat for the fish, especially the cutthroat. So, you know, when I started fishing here in the mid-70s, you know, there was always a lot of small cutthroat.
Stoneman says over the years, the size of the fish they're catching has been growing. He credits people starting to catch and release the cutthroat instead of catch and keep, Hungry Horse Dam mixing its water so the water released isn't too cold, timing dam releases to more closely mimic natural water flow, and the warmer summers.
We're starting to see in late summer moss and various other plant life in the river that we never used to see, and consequently we're seeing more bug life. You know, there's a lot of mayfly hatches that we never used to see.
Aquatic ecologist Clint Mulfeld with the U.S. Geological Survey says it makes sense to see some recreational fishing improve in the short term in the cold rivers surrounding Glacier Park. He says guides may be seeing longer seasons with an earlier spring runoff. However, he says climate change is altering the ecology of streams at different rates. He says rain events on winter snowpack and floods adversely affect the rivers, and a shrinking snowpack means less and less water sooner as summer progresses. Mulfeld gives another example of a change in the system in the growth of an algal species called didymo, or rock snot. Mulfeld says about 55% of Glacier's streams now contain didymo.
With rising temperatures and reduction in these flushing flows, we're actually seeing didymo on the rise in a lot of these major rivers, and that creates all these really condensed mats that actually suffocate the bottom of stream beds and dramatically alter the aquatic invertebrate communities there.
Mulfeld studies native bull trout and West Slope cutthroat trout in the crown of the continent. He says streams in the greater Flathead area have been somewhat buffered from some of the effects of climate change because the glacier-fed waters stay colder than in other parts of the state. However, he also says this area is seeing some rapid change, with air temperatures increasing 2 to 3 times the global rate.
I think, you know, Glacier National Park is iconic of the combined influence of climate change-induced glacier loss and snow loss. I mean, we had 150 glaciers at the end of the last little ice age, around 1850. Now there's 25 left, and they're predicted to be gone by 2030.
Stoneman says he's never measured a 70-degree water temperature on the Middle Fork or North Fork of the Flathead River, where he guides. 70 degrees is considered a critical temperature for trout. He says he usually measures temperatures around 65 degrees, but has seen temperatures up to 69 degrees. Mulfeld says the concern is that temperatures will reach a critical tipping point where the water heats up to a degree that's too hot for the fish and they die.
We're just not seeing that yet, but all indications are that these areas are changing, temperatures are rising, the hydrology is changing, and that is an indirect relation to global climate warming and the loss of our snowpack and glacier-fed mountain streams.
Stoneman says he's seen negative effects through wildfire and lower stream flows, and the long-term warming trend is something that needs to be reversed.
I think there's probably been some catastrophic events in the past, giant volcanic action or whatever, that probably have put more pollution in the air than we do. But, you know, still it's not good that man is adversely affecting the climate.
The Middle Fork and North Fork of the Flathead River join the South Fork before flowing south to Flathead Lake. The Flathead River meanders out of the lake and through the Flathead Reservation at Kerr Dam. The water here is warmer, warm enough this past summer to close the river to anglers.
I don't recall that many times when we've had to actually ask people not to fish.
Mike Durglow runs the Environmental Division of the Natural Resources Department for the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes. He recently completed a climate change strategic plan the tribes intend to use to guide management in forestry, agriculture, fish and wildlife, water and air quality, and public health. The plan holds that inaction on climate change would have negative social, environmental, cultural, and economic consequences for the future.
The whole, it's kind of difficult to say what the whole plan is about. To me, it's a survival plan. You know, traditionally, the tribal people handed down stories of life ways, and that's what taught the children how to live or how to survive.
Durglow says the way this knowledge is being passed on is changing. He also co-chairs the National Tribal Science Council, which last year identified climate change and traditional ecological knowledge as top priorities for tribes in the U.S. Durglow says the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes set priorities for wildlife and land to protect by surveying Natural Resource Department heads and tribal elders. They identified bull trout and West Slope cutthroat trout as top priorities for conservation efforts, not only because of their vulnerability in the face of warming waters, but also for their cultural significance.
So we depended on the fish. All three tribes, the Salish, the Ponderay, and the Kootenai, depended on fish for their lives at certain times of the year.
Information and education specialist Jermaine White says the tribes have a management focus on encouraging native species.
Bull trout are like the grizzly bear of water. They need big, clean, complex, cold, connected water in order to survive. The water had been damaged. The watershed had been damaged by construction, by logging, by irrigation, transportation infrastructure development, by construction, both residential and commercial. So there have been tremendous impacts on the water.
White says bull trout are an important player in tribal history.
We never had stories of starvation winters because we're ecotone people. We're people that live where at the backbone of the world where the water begins. And not only were we bison hunters, but we were also anglers, skilled anglers. And we knew where bull trout were, this high-quality, easily available source of protein.
White says the tribes have been ticking off watershed restoration projects across the reservation. Durglow says incorporating climate change considerations into management practices means looking at ways to cool off warmer waters. Restoration projects on creeks and rivers create shaded areas and deep pools. Durglow says the tribes will adapt. They have been for 1,000 years.
I believe that it's the Indian people, the indigenous people, who have the connection to the land that are kind of going to be the leaders in, I don't know if you'd call it saving the world, but at least showing the way.
Mulfeld says there are steps that can be taken on the local level in the face of global climate change. He says native fish have adapted to persist through cataclysmic events through the centuries. They just need to be given a chance.
There is hope. all the pieces are pretty much here in the Flathead. Being one of kind of the last of the best and the crown of the continent, we have intact habitat, connected, cold, clean, and complex areas where these bull trout and cutthroat persist.
Habitat restoration projects like the tribes have been pursuing are one way to help decrease the vulnerability of the threatened fish. Mulfeld says efforts to reduce the stress of competition, crossbreeding, and predation by non-native species like lake trout and rainbow trout, and restoring and reconnecting streams and waterways help build up the resiliency of native fish species so they can better adapt to a changing climate. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
Tomorrow, our series on climate change looks at the impacts on some of Montana's special wildlife. Reporter Dan Boyce will go searching for the majestic Rocky Mountain goat and the tiny pika. We also hope you'll tune in tonight at 7 o'clock when News Director Sally Mock hosts a panel of experts talking about Montana's changing fire climate. Also tune in tonight after the wildfire panel for a program produced by Montana PBS titled Degrees of Difference, featuring Montanans talking about their varying views of climate change.
And now for tonight's forecast. West of the Continental Divide tonight. Expect mostly clear skies and patchy freezing fog with lows in the mid-20s to lower 30s. Tomorrow should be mostly sunny with areas of freezing fog and highs in the 50s to lower 60s. Central Montana tonight, expect partly cloudy skies and lows 30 to 35 degrees. Tomorrow should be sunny with highs 55 to 60 degrees. Southwest Montana tonight should be mostly clear with lows 30 to 35 degrees. And tomorrow expect sunny weather with highs 55 to 60 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Mary Sheehy Moe.
Unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension, a dimension of sound and fury, a dimension of fright. You're moving into a land of shadow and little substance, of things and ideas fiercely believed, though barely believable. You've crossed over into the fact-free zone. Inhabitants of the fact-free zone are much in evidence these days. Bring up reasonable responses to our out-of-control gun violence, and you're barraged with conspiracy theories about the government's thirst to track you down and seize your weapons. Bring up affordable health care, and you're accosted by people who believe in death panels, and once again, fear that the feds hunger to know everything about you. But the Common Core education standards? How can anyone get flapped up about them? First, a bit of factual background. In 2008, state school superintendents and governors started discussing the desirability of a shared set of standards in the core subjects that made the high school diploma more portable across state lines and better aligned with colleges and careers. They decided to give it a shot. Teams of educators, business people, and others were assembled to develop Common Core standards, beginning with English and math. Input on the standards was solicited. Drafts were drafted, sent out for review, and revised. Finally, a set of standards the majority believed were rigorous, relevant, and portable was endorsed. Then the states decided whether or not to adopt them. Montana was the 46th state to do so, after our Board of Public Education, as usual, invited public review and comment for nearly 2 years. That board also conducted a gap analysis between the proposed standards and the existing ones and concluded the proposed standards were more specific, comprehensive, rigorous, and more clearly connected to the expectations of colleges and careers. After modifying the National Common Core standards to include Montana-specific goals like Indian Education for All, in 2011, the Board of Public Education adopted Montana's Common Core standards for English Language Arts and Mathematics. Read them. Papa Nodos first, because unless you're a math or English teacher, they're about as riveting as a user's manual for your lawnmower. Then consider these fact-free statements from Montanans Against Common Core. Flight of Fancy number 1. The Common Core is a stealth federal takeover to lower standards and create a national curriculum that will indoctrinate your children. Come on now. On the strategic level, why would our government want to lower education standards? And as a practical matter, the federal government has no authority to dictate curriculum standards in Montana. Nada. Zip. Squat. Montana's Board of Public Education has the sole authority to establish education standards. But even that board can't dictate local curriculum. Only local school boards can do that. Montana school boards, as well as the communities that elect them, guard that right zealously. Fanciful flight number two. The Common Core implements Orwellian data tracking of children. Their health care records, family incomes, voting and religious preferences, social issues, moods, habits, and values will be closely monitored through a longitudinal data system. The better to lobotomize you with, my dear. Okay, reality check. Montana has tracked longitudinal data on student achievement for years. The data system has nothing to do with the new standards, and nothing has been added because of the new standards. The system doesn't track any of the stuff alleged in the fact-free zone. Galactic Flight number three. I actually have to quote this one because it is so in the zone, and I apologize for occasionally interrupting. It starts with switching American literature with pop culture lyrics. Then come subjective feelings. Is there some other kind? Opinions instead of facts. Now facts matter. Multiculturalism, social justice, and diversity. These are problems. Climate change. This isn't. And socialist studies instead of American history. Oh, please. Soon, globalist child robots are replacing the American ideal. Right, because then they can be programmed to take your guns and through Obamacare spawn a race of alien automatons. Does anybody really believe this stuff? The sad answer is that a small but vocal Montana contingent does, emphatically and intractably. When you try to slide a fact or two into the zone, you are shouted down. Ah, for the good old days of Chicken Little. This is Mary Sheehy Moe, retired but still advocating for free, quality public education in Montana. For some facts about Montana's Common Core standards, visit the Hot Topics link at opi.montana.gov or read the appendix to this commentary at mtpr.org.
Mary Sheehy Moe is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.